Good morning. So wonderful to be here in practice with you today on this absolutely gorgeous morning. Today's talk will probably be a little on the shorter side because I want to leave plenty of time for us to have a discussion and look at any questions that you might have. Today I'm going to talk about maybe a little more detail than usual about how we practice when thoughts and feelings visit us that we're not so happy to encounter, and especially from a practice point of view. But as always, we do this practice here in this safe, supportive environment, where it's nice and quiet, and it's not as complicated as when we leave the Zen Center and we're interacting with a lot more complexity. Although I'm sure you all understand, you bring your own complexity with you everywhere you go. I want to start with a quote. May you live in interesting times. Do you know this? You know this one? Ever heard this? Yeah, some of you. It's an old Chinese curse, and it's been echoing in my mind lately. May you live in interesting times. Well, we certainly seem to be living in interesting times right now. And when somebody told this quote to me many years ago, I thought it was really funny. I appreciated how sly and clever it was. But more recently, with all the things that are going on in the world right now, I'm really hearing it according to the true intent in which it was given in ancient China. It goes without saying we're living in very uncertain times. And before I go any farther, I want to mention that all times are uncertain times. Life is uncertain. And so much of our suffering comes from our inability to accept this. We don't know moment to moment exactly how things will go. We don't know what will come up in our consciousness from moment to moment. But right now, not to kind of put salt on the wound, but everywhere we look, it seems like we're teetering on the edge. You know, not so long ago, we somehow suffered through this incredible pandemic. The foundational principles of our government are under attack. Some people think that's the best thing to happen ever. Some people think the floor of the proverbial elevator shaft has fallen out from under us. AI is threatening to replace millions of human workers. Sounds like it will happen sooner than later. In fact, it's already happening to a certain extent. And the health of our planet continues to decline at an alarming rate. So this seems to be a time where so many of us are feeling untethered, anxious, overwhelmed and fearful. Most of our lives are lived trying to avoid the things that make us feel uncomfortable. We invent elaborate strategies, hoping to keep suffering away from our door. And especially in times like this, when we find ourselves obsessing about our untenable situation, it makes us either want to do one of two things, either disagree or demonize even those who disagree with us. We see this in extreme polarization in our society right now. Or we're looking for the nearest escape route, right? Whether that's through doom scrolling online, shopping, working on our own personal brand, which we see everywhere right now. Escape through alcohol and drugs. Looking at the TV square, all of which is understandable. So when we experience these feelings deeply, psychologists call it flight or fight. And we're seeing a lot of that in our society today. So the very strategies that we use to avoid suffering, either finding someone outside of us to blame everything on and demonize, or to escape from, can literally become a cause of our suffering. That's what brings a lot of people to Zen. So fortunately, our Zen Buddhist practice offers what you might initially think of as a counterintuitive approach. And I think of it as non-resistance. So that's what I want to talk about today. I want to begin by reading the first line of an ancient poem attributed to the third Chinese ancestor of Zen, or Chan in his day. And many of you know this very well because we looked at Seng San's poem translated as Trust in Mind during our 9-day retreat last summer. But the first two lines go like this. The great way is not difficult. Just don't pick and choose. When preferences are cast aside, the way stands clear and undistinguished. At first glance, Seng San, it might sound like Seng San is suggesting we simply let go of our moral compass, throw our hands in the air, and become passive bystanders while the world goes up in flames. But there's something else going on here, and I urge you not to look at it that way, because if you do, you won't really look at it deeply yourself. For me, they point to something much more fundamental about our practice. And that is accepting rather than avoiding the truth as it unfolds from moment to moment. Can we be here now? Through the joyous, through the boring, through the anxious, through the questioning, through the pain, through the suffering, through the grievances we hold on? Can we be present for that? This is what I want to pitch to you today, if you aren't already doing it, because I think it can really, really be effective as we continue our Zen practice. At first glance, Or I should say, when we first come to Zen practice, so many of us hold on to some maybe not even very well examined idea that if we practice hard enough, if we put ourselves on that cushion and just keep at it, at some point we will wake up and our suffering will be gone. All better. While we can wake up and our relationship to suffering can change because of that, or even if we don't have that awakening experience that we all read about and hear about, this practice can help us with that. Or maybe, as we get a little bit more adept at meditation, if we can just find that place of stillness and bliss, if you want to go so far, stillness and bliss, that quiet, still place that you might get just a peek at every once in a while. And it'll somehow shield us from the kinds of discomfort we feel now. But eventually, we realize that this in this world where everything is continually changing, not every moment or not every situation will suit us. So rather than hoping that suffering won't darken our door, our practice involves working with the broad range that comes under the heading suffering whenever it does appear. The Buddha's first noble truth is dukkha, which means suffering. For those of us who were exposed to maybe a two-week study in a world's history class about Buddhism, you might have heard Buddha said, life is suffering. Buddha didn't say life is suffering. He said, and it may sound just like semantics, but he said this: there's this truth which is suffering, followed by there's a way to find the source of our suffering. There's a path that we can follow that will help us ease that suffering. And then his teaching was the path. You might all just as well have said, life is joy. But if you've lived long enough, and it doesn't take that long to find out, joy can eventually turn into suffering because everything changes. So this is where non-resistance comes in. The first step is to let our thoughts and feelings come and go freely. This is the basic meditation practice that we learn when we're first given instruction. Let everything come and go in our consciousness. We simply watch the stream, or the parade, if you will, of thoughts and feelings appear and disappear in our consciousness. We're just being present with the truth of this moment. You can call that, you can put that in a lowercase letter T. The truth as it appears moment to moment as we practice. So whether we experience joy or boredom or anxiety or mundane thoughts, grocery lists, what I'll have for lunch, for example, we just watch that appear and disappear. And when we find that we're attaching to some idea or some feeling, our instruction is to, with utmost kindness, just let that go without pushing it away and come back to our practice over and over and over again. This is a really important thing. about meditation. I think so many of us, especially at the beginning, feel that if what they're really experiencing in meditation is how absolutely crazy and wild our minds are, they're doing something wrong. That's not the case. The truth of the moment when you have a busy mind is busy mind. So we watch the busyness of our mind. And I think the thing that's underappreciated is that by going back and starting over and starting over and starting over and starting over, when we notice we've been distracted or gone down that rabbit hole, we learn to recognize when we're not present, and we know how to find our way back and re-engage with ourselves in the world. So when we find ourselves resisting a thought, and you know this already, we typically jump into a storyline of some kind. Let's say by replaying an awkward encounter we had with a friend, and the dialogue starts. It's really a monologue, but we like to think of it as a dialogue. Why in the world would they treat me like that? I thought they were my friend. Maybe they were never my friend at all. And all of a sudden, the objectification of a person in our mind begins, when in fact it might just be a misunderstanding or a lack of communication. And before it, we know it, we built this protective and isolating wall around ourselves, reinforcing this notion of I, which above all needs to be protected at all costs. But it's in these moments when the thoughts and feelings that scare us, don't suit us, make us angry, spark feelings that feel really uncomfortable. This is where we have the opportunity to practice non-resistance. So instead of creating that storyline, we can practice, at least to the whatever ability we can, being with that feeling. And we can always find that feeling in our body. In our body. This word dukkha that I mentioned a minute ago, that was in Buddha's language the word for suffering, is translated as a sense of contraction. And we can actually feel our bodies contract, tighten up, gird ourselves when we encounter things that frighten us or scare us or make us feel under attack. There is actually an opposite word, sukha, which is a feeling of spaciousness and a feeling of being at ease. So part of this practice is noticing, learning to notice when you're feeling at ease, and learning to know for yourself when you're tightening up. This takes a lot of practice because we're so adept at turning everything into a story. We immediately go to our thinking mind and we project all of our conditioned ideas, our beliefs, our hopes, fears onto something that just visited us. But we might notice that the thoughts we don't want to encounter are accompanied by that sense of contraction in our body. So instead of going to our thinking, if we can train ourselves to go to our body, maybe when we feel it, become curious about it. Not in a conceptual way, but in a direct experiential way. Where is this feeling of tightness? Is it a feeling of tightness? Does it feel like an empty pit? Is it sharp? Is it ache? Is it a dull ache? Feel the feelings. What does the sensation feel like? And I think this is important too. If we really become curious about it and examine it closely, we can see whether this feeling is moving in our bodies physically, like physical energy, whatever the quality of it is. Is it changing? I think that's an important thing for us to discover too, because when we're feeling we're under attack, we're suffering, we're overwhelmed, I think the best way I can think about it is we are in kind of a hell realm. In that moment, we feel like we're going to be eternally in that state. But if we go to the physical feeling, we might notice that it's actually changing, like everything in the universe. So we can see that it too has arisen in our consciousness. And if we don't feed it by fighting it, by trying to escape it, it will disappear from our consciousness and be replaced by something else. Maybe the sounds of the bird twittering outside. Maybe a little breeze blowing through that window across your face. So, baby step by baby step, we can learn not to run away from the things that we think of as negative. And we can learn to refrain from turning it into the thoughts, the stories that put up more walls. And we can become more open and more ease. Some Zen teachers talk about this process as being analogous to sitting side by side with our demons. Some talk about it becoming intimate with our fears. Others suggest that when we locate it, we can send warmth or love to it. Some of these, I think it's best to think of these as possibilities to try on. If it's too, the thought of sending unconditional love to the thing that is really freaking me out right now might be too much of a step. But can you abide with it? Can you be with it? So we have to find our own way to work this, the nuances of this out. And we have to work at our own pace, which means, above all, we must always remember to be unceasingly kind to ourselves. You will feel uncomfortable when you do this, but I have found, right? Yeah, you will. But if you make a decision to actually investigate this, each time you even succeed in just an incremental way, over time, you'll realize, as you've heard me say a lot, these really rough edges of things that really haunt us get worn away bit by bit by bit by bit. And the things that really push our buttons, the things that we really react strongly to, will eventually come back, but our relationship to it can change in a really surprising way.